If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365Copilot.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. Stop waiting around for the perfect candidate. Instead, use Indeed-sponsored jobs to find the right people with the right skills fast. It's a simple way to make sure your listing is the first candidate see. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs have 4 times more applicants than non-sponsored jobs. So go build your dream team today with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When it's time to go after the biggest buck of your life, you need gear that will not only make your life easier, but that you can also depend on for years to come. Lone Wolf Custom Gear has been the leader in mobile hunting equipment for over 40 years and started out right here in Wisconsin. From inventing the climbing stick to perfecting ultralight tree stands, Lone Wolf Custom Gear continues to innovate and put the best mobile hunting equipment on the market with a ton of fantastic accessories that allow you to customize your gear exactly how you want it. Whether it be the high-end DeQuisto series sticks and stands or the affordable Patriot series, you'll have the peace of mind knowing that you're hanging off of gear that was 100% made in the USA, right here in the Midwest, in fact, and has been designed and perfected by some of the best whitetail hunters in the world. Not to mention, it has an unconditional lifetime warranty that's so good your grandkids and even great-grandkids will be able to use it when they're hunting. Go build your kit out today at lonewolfcustomgear.com.
E-scouting is the crucial first step to any great adventure, but sometimes we gotta swap the muck boots for flip-flops and the shotguns for fishing rods and get out on the water to recharge those batteries. Whether you're in search of the lunker that broke you off last summer or trying to get the family out for a day on the water, you need to have a game plan. That's where Onyx Fish comes into play. With detailed bathymetry maps, expert information, historical fisheries data, and filters that allow you to hone in on your next favorite lake for a multitude of species, this is an angler's best friend. Shoot, I'm actually planning a father-son trip to the Northwoods with some buddies right now, and I already feel like I've got a game plan in place to catch more fish than the rest of those guys. And the best part is, it's easy, intuitive, and based on the same platform as our beloved Onyx Hunt app. Go check it out today and start finding your next honey hole at onyxmaps.com/fish. Fall is here and it's time to get out in the woods. And when you do, you need gear that's going to keep you warm, dry, and concealed while you're pursuing wild game. That's why I'm proud to be partners with Huntworth Gear, the makers of badass, affordable hunting gear that's readily available and won't break the bank. You've heard me talk about this gear for years now, and for good reason. Their Heat Boost gear is the warmest hunting gear I've ever worn, and guys, I promise you, I'm not just saying that. It beats the heck out of traditional merino, fleece, or down hunting clothes. Not to mention, we've got a ton of great new camo patterns, including our new waterfowl pattern, Oberus, which has been expertly designed to keep you concealed from wary ducks flying overhead. To go get kitted out for this fall, visit huntworthgear.com or head on over to the sporting goods section of your local Farm and Fleet or Fleet Farm to check it out in person. Southwest Wisconsin is home to one of the most unique trout fisheries in the country, with thousands of miles of spring-fed streams twisting their way through valleys, pastures, and prairies, and one of the best ways to experience this fishery is with a fly rod in hand. Good Chance Fly Fishing is your guide to all that the Driftless has to offer, whether you're an experienced angler or you're just looking to try something new and get into fly fishing. To find more info and book your trip, visit goodchanceflyfishing.com. If you've listened to this show before, I'm sure you've noticed that if there's one thing that keeps coming up over and over again, it's the importance of public lands and waters. Shoot, I'd venture to guess that 90% of what we talk about on this show takes place on public lands. We all love the challenges we face and the memories we create in these wild places, and we need folks who are in our corner to protect them as well. That's why we're proud to have partnered with the good folks over at the Wisconsin Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. The Wisconsin BHA Chapter was formed to provide a voice for hunters and anglers throughout Wisconsin that want to protect our public land legacy, and everyone involved worked their tails off to protect public lands and access to those public lands and waters. To stay informed on all things public lands, the issues facing our public lands, policies that might affect them, and to cross paths with some of the coolest outdoorsmen out there, I highly encourage you to join the Wisconsin Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, or at least the chapter of whatever state you live in. Also, be on the lookout for our Wisconsin Public Land Policy bonus episodes to keep you all in the loop on the legal side of conservation and how things get done here in Wisconsin. To join BHA, visit backcountryhunters.org/join, and to learn more about what's going on here in the Badger State, visit backcountryhunters.org/Wisconsin. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast, which is brought to you by Lone Wolf Custom Gear. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things hunting, fishing, and conservation in the Badger State. Folks, I hope you're all doing well. I hope you enjoyed what I'm hoping isn't a totally false spring. I don't know about you guys, but it has been delightful to get outside, stretch the legs, get a little sun on the face. Gosh, can't remember the last time we got to do that. As I record this, I literally just wrapped up an awesome day of doing a little scouting on some of our trout streams. Had some of the happiest trout I've seen in a long time. We had a crazy thick midge hash. We had a bunch of fish eating streamers. It was just delightful. Put on, I think, 2.5 miles on the boots or on the waders. I don't know what you call that. But anyways, covered a lot of ground, covered a lot of water, had an awesome time. And looking at the forecast, we've actually got a pretty killer looking next couple of weeks here. So I don't always do this. I don't always get to do this. But if any of you want to experience some fantastic late winter, early spring, if this pattern holds, type fishing, I would love to take you out. You can find more information on that, rates and all that information to get in touch at goodchanceflyfishing.com. We don't get this window very often, but these fish have not been pressured for several months. They are eating with reckless abandon, and it's only going to get better. So book those dates, get on the calendar, and get in touch, because I'd love to take you fishing. On that note, I actually am just coming off of a weekend. I was just down at the Sitka store in Vernon Hills for the release of the new line of fishing apparel, which was a hoot. I got to get up on stage, do a little presentation. I guess I can't really call it a stage, but got to get up in front of folks, give a little trout presentation on the Driftless and kind of what I do as a guide, and check out some awesome gear, which was pretty fun. The new waders, new wading boots look good. I copped a pair of their new Riptide Quick Dries, which are super slick, and also one of their Alpha hoodies, which sold me after I talked to one of their store managers, who's a big Upland guy, who said that sucker does not pick up burrs. And I can tell you after today, he is correct. So go check that stuff out if you are in the market for some new fishing apparel. Not a partner, but just a shameless plug here, because I was very impressed. And I have a lot of appreciation for those guys. Also got a chance to chat with some of you guys who listened to the show, which was super cool. I always love doing that. All around, it was just a great day. So huge shout out to those guys down at the Sitka Vernon Hills store for having me out and for putting on such an awesome event. But this week, you guys, I have an absolutely fantastic episode for you guys. I got a chance to sit down with Mr. Ben O'Brien, who is the co-host of The Roost Show with Sam Soholt. He's the founder of Woodside Media, and he's the former host of the Hunting Collective podcast, which was a meat eater show. Still is on the network, but obviously they're not putting out newer episodes. But kind of the impetus of the Hunting Collective, and what one of the things that I really appreciated about Ben that drew me to the show was that he wasn't afraid to have difficult conversations and dive into some of the stickier questions around the ethics of hunting and really a lot of the whys of why we hunt and why we do things, why we, certain conservation models are organized the way that they are, so on and so forth. And I really appreciated that Ben was thoughtful enough to dive into some of those things. And so I wanted to get him on the show to talk about some of that stuff. We sort of talk about that, but more so we talk about kind of what Ben's evolution as an outdoorsman and as a professional in the outdoor space has looked like. You'll hear Ben talk about it. He's not an old guy, but he's been around the industry for quite a while. And it was super cool hearing him tell stories about kind of how he got into the industry, who some of those early mentors were, and what things were said to him by, you know, bosses, mentors, you name it, over the course of his career as he started to, you know, get older and get married, have kids, move the family out to Montana, so on and so forth, and just kind of what that juggling of all that responsibility looked like as a young professional in the outdoor space and also being a family man. So it was super cool. We hear the story of he and his son filling his son's first turkey tag down in Texas this last spring, which if you listen to the Roost Show, you probably heard that already. But it is an awesome story. I'm super appreciative of Ben for sharing that and just kind of diving into a lot of the conversations between he and his son leading up to that hunt, the emotions before, during, and after that hunt, as well as some of the thoughts and questions that arose after that hunt. And if you want to check that hunt out, you can actually watch the whole thing go down over on the Roost Show YouTube channel. I'll link that down in the show notes. But it's just a fantastic episode. Ben's a dude who I've looked up to for a really long time, ever since I was a grad school student. During COVID, I was doing a bunch of solo painting and rough carpentry work for some folks around the Chicagoland area. And the Hunting Collective and Ben are kind of what got me through that period of time and through those long summer days. I remember listening back then, thinking to myself, like, gosh, it would be the coolest thing ever to be able to work in the hunting industry and, you know, be able to chat with Ben and so on and so forth. And after we hung up from this one, I kind of sat back, zoomed out a little bit, and had sort of this wave of gratitude just crash over me, partially because of Ben and him just taking time to come on the show, and especially him being one of the guys that I've looked up to for a really long time, but also a ton of gratitude for you guys for allowing this thing to be what it is and allowing me to host this thing, for tuning in every single Tuesday. And I just have an immense feeling of gratitude towards all of you, towards Ben, and just for this whole thing being what it is, because this conversation kind of forced me to zoom out a little bit and see the forest through the trees a little more and acknowledge that 5 years ago when I was a grad school student, thinking how cool it would be to work in the industry, I never would have thought I'd be here right now talking to all of you guys. So that's pretty freaking cool. Been thinking about that a lot lately. And like I said, just have a ton of gratitude for all of you listening to this show right now. So with that, you guys, before we dive into this episode, I've got one more announcement. On March 7th, our Wisconsin BHA chapter is going to be doing an intro to Western hunting workshop. That's going to be at the Vortex headquarters. Again, that's March 7th. So get signed up for that. Go check out the BHA events page to get signed up, RSVP for all that good stuff. That's going to be awesome. Vortex facility, if you haven't been, is a spectacle of the Midwest and happens to be right down the road from where I grew up. So I got a little touch of home back there as well. But with that, you guys, thank you all so much. But huge thanks to Ben for coming on the show. Huge thanks to all of you guys. And be sure to go sign up for that BHA workshop. Get in touch if you want to do some trout fishing. And last but not least, be sure to go tune in to The Roost Show. It is the best doggone turkey hunting podcast you're going to find out there with Ben and Sam. I look forward to it every year. I enjoy each and every episode. You guys will too, I'm sure. And with that, you guys, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next Tuesday. All right, joining me on this week's episode, I have co-host of The Roost podcast, Ben O'Brien. Ben, how are we doing today?
Hey, Pierce, how's it going, man?
Excellent. Dude, I'm stoked to be chatting with you. I'm really stoked for this one, actually. So we crossed paths briefly as I was leaving the Doe Derby on that cold December evening. And I was coming out the door and I heard a voice and I was like, I know that voice. Why do I know that voice? And I was flashing back to my days as a humble grad student when I was painting houses in 2019 over the summer, and I would just show up to the job, click on the Hunting Collective and binge those episodes to get me through the summer. And so I'm really stoked to be chatting with you today. Obviously you're not doing that anymore, but just to see where you're at today, talk some turkeys, talk a little driftless action, and just learn more about you, dude. I'm stoked for this one.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I always apologize to people that have listened to podcasts I'm on. I'm like, sorry you had to go through that experience. But my apologies. The 2019 was a fun year, so I'm glad you're on the back end. And it was, you know, it was a cold night in Doug Duren's farmhouse. I will say that he's here in town in Bozeman this week, and we did share a few beers last night. So if I'm not quite up to snuff on the podcast, and you can blame Doug. He's following me around, making me go to bars in different places. So you can always blame him.
He's a rascal, that's for sure.
He is. He is.
Well, dude, you've got a pretty long resume here, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Just kind of like what your career's looked like up to this point and what all you do?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we were talking a little bit before we hit record about the trajectory. I would say kind of in a nutshell, you know, my career, you know, I've trained as a journalist and wanted to be a journalist my whole life. That was the dream as a kid. That was the dream in college. That was, it was always kind of slanted towards sports in the beginning. But I always wanted to be a journalist. I, you know, my personality is very much like, I'm not a joiner. I'm kind of, I'm from the East Coast, so I don't really, agree with much. I'm pretty skeptical. That's just like the nature of who I am and how I've always been. I was never a good, a school student because I was always arguing with the teacher, debating with the principal about some rule or something that I didn't agree with. So that's always been my personality. So I think it paired pretty well with being a journalist. And so that's what I wanted to do. And that's what I did for a while, and then got into the hunting industry on a whim. Basically met a guy at a bar who was the editor of American Rifleman, which was the NRA's main magazine. I knew about that, but I didn't think that hunting was like a profession that somebody could get into. I grew up hunting and I loved hunting, but I never considered it for whatever reason. And he said, man, I just got back from Africa. I was like, oh, that's cool. Was that a family trip? Or he's like, no, that was a work trip. And I was like, what'd you do there? And he started flipping through his phone. I was back in the BlackBerry days. He had a BlackBerry. He's flipping through his BlackBerry, if anybody remembers that.
Oh yeah.
And he was flipping through his BlackBerry and showing me all these pictures of him and these animals in Africa. And I thought, this is a job? I was like, you paid them a little bit for that or something. Like, you paid for your flights. He's like, no, this is my job. And then a week later in the mail, he sent me the magazine with that story in it. And I read it and I was like, wow, this is a gig. And with that in the mail, he wrote me a little note saying, hey, you know, I'm leaving this job. You should apply for it. And so I applied for it as like a 21-year-old, I think, close to college grad. And they rejected me immediately. Like, no, you can't be the editor of American Rifleman. I was like, okay, that seems reasonable. And then
you didn't disagree. Okay.
You know, I was like, yeah. Because at the time I was working as a stringer for newspapers. I was working as an intern for the Washington Post sports section. Mm-hmm. I was in the sports journalism world, and I was, you know, you're coming out. I was a couple, 4 or 5 months away from graduating and trying to figure it out. And it wasn't too long after that that I saw this is, and this is going to make me, like I said, I'm not old, but I've been around long enough that this will sound old. It was like the first ever digital position that they were hiring for American Hunter magazine, which is the cousin to American Rifleman. And I thought, well, I'll put in for that. So I put in for that, immediately got a call back, did some interviews, made some terrible mistakes in the interview as a 21-year-old, complete idiot. But still, I got the job. And I remember calling my dad. We celebrated, like, I'm in the hunting industry. I don't know what that means. But I'm, you know, a real editor. I was the digital editor of American Hunter. And that was the start of, it wasn't long after that that I realized this is a real job. There are awesome people here. And I actually get to go and hunt for my job and write about it, which I never thought would be a thing. And so as soon as I got in there and realized what it really was and realized what those opportunities were, I wasn't letting that thing go ever. Like, I was never going to go back or never going to try a different gig. I was always going to chase that, you know, what it felt like to be in the hunting industry. Because I remember first time I got to go to Wyoming on a pronghorn hunt. I was 23, I think. And I just didn't know what to do. I know. Like, I wrote about it somewhere. You probably find it on AmericanHunter.com or wherever .org or wherever it lives. But I didn't really know that much about hunting. And so, you know, from there, I grew up in the hunting industry. I mean, I quite literally spent my formative years in the industry, traveling the world and meeting all these cool people, and worked at American Hunter for about 3 or 4 years, and then worked for Peterson Hunting magazine for about 3 or 4 years, and then on to Yeti to help run and help kind of start their hunting marketing division when they were a relatively young company. And then on to, you know, Steve Rinella was my hunting hero at the time and a friend, and he called me up and said, we're doing this meat eater thing, I need you, man. And then at first it was going to be in Seattle, and I was like, no, I'm not going to go to Seattle. And then they moved it to Bozeman, Montana, and I was like, okay, that's it, I'm coming. And that brought me here to Bozeman, and then had a great run there, as you mentioned, with the Hunting Collective and a lot of stuff that we were able to do there. And then jumped off the corporate treadmill and got into my own thing. And so now we have a marketing agency called Woodside, and a podcast we do called Roost, and a bunch of other content brands and stuff that we're incubating, getting ready to launch here this year and into next year, that are a part of the outdoors. And now I have kids that I take hunting, and it's kind of a full circle moment, but always a journalist, always skeptical, and always love the outdoors. And so the fact that I've been able to do a little bit of that mixed together over the last, you know, 17, 18 years has been pretty cool.
Dude, absolutely. What a, just an awesome story there. Just, I mean, what a crazy journey, like from just the odds of running into that guy at the bar or whatever. And, you know, it turns out he just got back from that trip. Like, he could have been a day later and he was still over there, whatever, like just the stars aligning to kind of get you that little foot in the door of like, oh wait, this is possible. That's freaking sick.
It's that, man. It's like realizing it's possible. Is a really important thing. Today, I think it's different because there's a democracy of media. But back then, mm-hmm. you had to get a gig at a media house or a magazine or a publication. That's what it was. I was intern at the Washington Post when they were kind of fighting over the newspaper and the website and which one would have kind of like dominance and which one would really take control of that enterprise. And so that was an interesting time to be thrust into that media world. Totally. And I'll tell you this story. Like, I don't know if I've ever said this on a podcast before, but this really happened. And this will age that time as well. I was, the HR lady was wonderful at the NRA, called me up to give me the job. I accepted the job. She said, we'll get you all the paperwork. She said, but before I go, you're going to want to go look at your MySpace page and look at the photos that are on there, because you're a professional now and you're going to, we did review that and there are some things on there that you're going to want to remove before coming to work at the National Rifle Association. So I had to go back to my MySpace page and be like, what did I post? What is on there? You know, what dumb college things that I put on the internet. So there was a few things on there that were probably not meant for the professional realm. So I took them off, learned that lesson, didn't go back after that.
You were a pioneer at that point. You know, it was
a few cake stands, man. Listen, guy's going to do a cake stand. It's not a big deal. Let's back off, HR.
Right. Exactly. I feel like now that's just, they call that just content now. That's all.
That's content.
That's all that is.
That's getting views.
It's
yeah,
culture.
Getting
views. That's awesome, dude. Well, man, you kind of touched on, like, you know, you looked up to Steve Brunella and stuff over that journey. Like, were there any other mentors you had or folks who like really helped you along the way, like especially in those kind of earlier years?
Yeah, I was telling, actually, me and Doug were talking about this last night over beers. There's a couple moments, and I think important moments in my own story. There's a guy named Jim Brady at the Washington Post, who was this kind of digital news pioneer and this really like well-regarded guy inside of the Washington Post. He went on to do a bunch of, we never really stayed connected, but he went on to do a bunch of really cool stuff in local news. It was just kind of a digital pioneer in that decade where, you know, prior to Instagram, where things were really starting to go from the .com era into the social media era. Mm-hmm. And he was a pioneer. And I remember he gave a talk to our team of interns, and I wasn't there for it. I missed it. I had something going on. And I requested, I was a pretty hard charger back then, and I was doing 40 things, and I just couldn't be satiated. I mean, I'd write and write and write. And I was that kind of guy. I was pretty pushy. And I just requested and requested and requested a meeting because I was like, man, I missed your talk. I want to hear from you. I want a meeting, just me and you. And, you know, I was a busy guy. So, you know, listen, intern, go back to your desk. I got that a few times, but I didn't give up. I was like, man, I want to sit with you. Just give me 10 minutes. And he did eventually give me 10 minutes. And we talked and I asked him questions. And from what I remember, he said, look, like, as a journalist and a storyteller, you have to like not be scared of a fight and stand on principle, but also like you're going to need to learn how to film, you need to learn how to edit, you need to learn how to write, you need to learn how to code, you need to learn how to do all these things, because a journalist in this day and age is really never going to be able to just write a newspaper article and sit on that. Like that's no longer going to be a thing. And that turned out to be quite prescient, pretty true across what I've done, you know. And then getting into my career, there was a bunch of people. Steve is one of them. Less of a mentor, just more of like a, you know, a hero type of a person that I looked up to and just really admired. But I've had, you know, mentors along the way. You know, a guy named Bill Neff who works at Yeti. I was my boss when I was there. He's an amazing dude and always coached balance. You know, like, I think for all outdoorsmen, I think you probably know, like, you can get a little carried away mm-hmm. with your pursuits and maybe not exactly prioritize everything equally or in the right balance. So he always preached balance, and he was just such a good person. And at the time, he had three kids, and I had yet to have kids. And I was like, what's it like to have three kids? I don't think I'll ever have three kids. And now that I have three kids, I'm like, oh, what a champ that guy was. But yeah, a lot of really good. I mean, I've been able to be around guys like Joe Rogan, and Remy Warren, and people that I, man, just greatly, greatly admire, and been able to, you know, build friendships and relationships with those people outside of their public personas, however you see them. And so those folks are important to my journey too, just to be able to, you know, to be with them and to see Joe, especially, you know, everybody, Joe Rogan's kind of a different thing now when you say that name. It's a bit different, but when I met him, he was just the guy from Fear Factor, mm-hmm. who was pretty funny and did psychedelics, and I thought was a very interesting person. You know, he was just that, and now he's become a lot bigger than that. But last time I was with him, right before, you know, I went out on my own, we were playing pool, and he was like, "Man, don't have a boss. Like, you don't need a boss. You're smart enough not to have a boss. What are you doing with a boss?" So I listened to that, went out on my own. It's worked out really well. So just little moments like that, where that's those stories. I've been lucky enough to meet a lot of really maybe famous people, but aside from their fame, just the people that they are, has impacted me for sure.
Yeah, totally. That's a good friend to say something like that to give you that extra little nudge that you need to go. Not that you necessarily needed it, but it helps, especially as a guy who's out on his own as well right now. When you have that one friend who kind of backs it and it's like, okay, I'm not crazy. Good. Like,
oh yeah.
Somebody else sees this too. Thank God. Okay. Awesome. Let's maybe give this a shot. That's super cool, dude. And yeah, I mean, the hunting industry is cool because it's big. It's, I don't know what you want to call it. It's just this kind of enigma. And then you meet somebody who's in it and you maybe get a peek behind the curtain and you're like, oh, it's pretty small. Like, it's not, it's big, but it's not huge. You know, it's most people have probably either talked to or know, you know, whoever it is that you're thinking about or watching on YouTube or Netflix or whatever it may be. Most folks, it seems like they're, you know, at least just one or two connections away, which is pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, it is. It is like that. I mean, I've spent, like I said, my formative years in it, walking around a trade show or I always say, like, there's no hug like a hug you share with somebody that had been at hunting camp with you or been on some crazy adventure or, mm-hmm. you know, there's just nothing like that connection that you get with somebody if you spent camp with them or you've done something really crazy or hard with them. You could not talk to them for a decade, but those things remain like vital to your life and your memories and your, like, what shapes you. Like, that is, and I have that, I mean, in spades. I'm at a different stage of my life now. I have kids. Yeah, I need to be here for them. My full focus is on my family. That's what I think about when I get up. It's what I think about when I'm going to bed. It's pretty much all encompassing for me. And that's just the stage of life that I'm in. But the story I was telling was really my entire 20s and 30s. I was just in this industry, growing up in this industry with these people and meeting them and having fun and going to Vegas and going traveling the world and hunting. And like, I didn't know that that was special. I just thought that was, I knew it was cool, but I didn't know how great it was. And I'm glad that I didn't, cause I just got to experience it and I got to go there. It's not over yet. I'm not retired or anything like that. I'm just in a different stage of life, you know, where my focus is here and it's required to be here. And so in some ways has shifted. And so I can look back at my 20s and 30s and just marvel at what I was able to experience and do and how it's shaped me and how it will shape my children, and who I've got to meet and now who my children have access to. Guys like Doug Duren, you know, for there's a long list, but he's on it for sure. So now I have access to these people that I can say, hey, you know, hey, swamp people, hey, Landry family, can I bring my son down to go gator hunting? And they're going to say, yeah, sure, come on down. And so now I get to pass that on, and I feel lucky to be able to do that. Because that the hunting community, look, it's an industry, it's a community. There's plenty of fun conflict and weird things and bad moments, and there's plenty of that. Some people like to probably over-index on focusing on that because they like drama or whatever, but to me, it's just a bunch of really cool people and really cool experiences. And that's, it wouldn't be doing the kind of life I've had justice to focus on any of this stuff. That's maybe negative. It's just that it wouldn't, cause I'm lucky enough to have done the things I've done. So I have to pay back. I was telling somebody this the other day, I got to pay it back. I don't know. First I got to pay it back with my family. but I got to pay it back every single moment that I can, for the rest of my life. Like, I don't, you know, I got a mentor. I got to, you know, show up for conservation. I got to do those things. It's just what I got to do.
Hey guys, I just wanted to take a quick sec to tell you about Lone Wolf Custom Gear. Lone Wolf Custom Gear is as good as it gets when it comes to mobile hunting equipment. Whether you're a saddle or stand guy, public land or private, Lone Wolf Custom Gear has a set of sticks, a stand, a camera arm, and any number of accessories to get you closer to your target buck. To make it even better, everything is 100% USA sourced and made right here in the Midwest. And it's even assembled right across the river in Iowa by hunters who love chasing deer just as much as you do. To build your kit today.
Yeah, definitely, man. Well said. You know, one of the things we talked as I was heading out of the Dern farm, we were kind of touching on the hunting collective and some of the conversations, the importance of just the talking with folks with widely different backgrounds than what, you know, we typically have. I think especially in the day of social media, it's really easy to get trapped in an echo chamber or to let your algorithm kind of guide your thoughts and stuff like that. But one of the things you said to me when we were chatting there was that, you know, a lot of those lessons you're kind of relearning now that you've got your son with you and you're doing those trips with your son and you're learning those things, whether it be like woodsmanship stuff or hunting stuff, but also just like some of those conversations and different perspectives and stuff. What are some of those things that have kind of stuck out to you over the last couple of years?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think it for me personally, it's being able to pressure test some of these ideas with my own family. I would say like it comes in waves. My oldest son is 9 years old. He's only known eating wild game. He doesn't know any different. He's like, is this a mule deer or a pronghorn? He's not like, oh, it's wonderful. What a wonderful novelty that we're having this mule deer for dinner from the plains of wherever it came. Mm-hmm. Like we're past that. It's just there. And everyone in my family knows we eat wild game. Every once in a while, a bison steak or a beef steak might show up. But that's generally not happening. We just eat wild game. That's what we do. So that's great. I mean, it's just something. We garden, we eat wild game, it's just part of our lives. That's not for everybody, but it is for us. And so we just kind of move through these waves of kind of building these things into our lives, the scaffolding of our family and lives. And, you know, in the last couple of years, my 9-year-old has started to really participate in hunting. And the years prior to that, he went with me. You know, he's been pronghorn hunting and elk hunting with me since he was 4, I think. So he can, like, now this little dude can call up a bull elk and get a response, sometimes even more responses than I get, which is concerning that that's happening this young. But he also, you know, shot his first 2 turkeys last year. He'll go turkey hunting again this year. You know, he was able to go whitetail hunt on the Duran farm with me and sit in the blind and kind of experience that. And so he's in there, he's in it now. He's reading the books, he's thinking about the outdoors, he's wanting to go outside and dig in the dirt and, you know, sharpen a stick and experience nature. And man, I've told Doug this, and I've told a lot of people this. I, as you might imagine, thought a lot about what it would be like to hunt with my son for the first time when he actually had a tag. And that happened. We filmed it for Roost last year, and it was better and more impactful on me than I thought it could be. And that's quite a high bar, because I'd thought about it for a long time. I've been thinking about it for almost a decade up to that point. For example, like I was talking to him about, I mean, he's a 9-year-old, so focus is not his best. I mean, focus is not the thing that he's doing more than anybody. And we talked about focus, and when he was practicing with his 410, we talked about how to focus and stay on your target. And I told him, I said, man, don't worry about the sound or the recoil. You won't, when you shoot the turkey, you will not remember either one. And he was like, I don't understand. I said, well, just remember that when it happens. So it happens, this first turkey comes in, he shoots it. I mean, he couldn't have walked up and put it in its forehead any better than he shot this turkey. shoots this turkey. It flops over. He has this emotional dump, crying, and I'm crying. We're hugging. And then we go up to the turkey, and we're just sitting there and calming down. Emotions are, you know, kind of stabilizing. And he said, I didn't feel it. And I was like, told you. Told you, man. But later on, back at the house we were staying at, we had a conversation. We kind of sat on the bed, and he just kind of peppered me with questions about life and death, about flow states. We talked. He was like, why didn't I feel that? I said, well, it's a flow state, son. Like, you were fully focused on this task and on this, in this moment. Nothing else mattered. You were fully invested in where you were and what you were doing. And that is one of the most wonderful feelings that you could ever have. So we got to talk about flow state. And then we got to talk about life and death and what it means to take a life, and that it's okay to cry, and that it's okay to feel that way. It's also okay to talk about it, because he was like, I don't know if I want to go out tomorrow. I said, it's okay to not want to go out. It's okay to feel the weight of that death is too much to have more death. So it's okay. It's death. It should feel. You should feel it. Yeah. And so we got, I mean, he's nine. And we got to have those conversations, and he really understood those things. And we've kind of moved past that, I think, now. We won't forget that, just like we won't forget that wild game is, you know, we're lucky to have that. We're also lucky to have that experience where, you know, he was able to kind of realize the weight of and the gravity of hunting, and then realize kind of what a flow state is as a 9-year-old, and then move on to the next day where it was a little less pressure, a little less emotional, a little more normal. And on we've gone since then, where now he's just a hunter. But to go through those moments and see those things, I've seen that, like you mentioned, you know, new hunters and things. Like, I've seen that happen in adults too. So it's not so different. So I've learned that, like, that those moments, those really special moments where somebody takes a life for the first time and consumes that life and what that looks like, it's a little bit different, but there, boy, are there some through lines, whether you're 45 or 9 or 60 or 10, like, it doesn't matter how old you are. So I certainly, like, it has reaffirmed a lot of the things that I believed, and the things you probably heard me talk about on the Hunting Collective. Like, it has reaffirmed a lot of those things for me, which is like this really cool, intimate thing for me personally.
Yeah, dude, first off, that was like the recap of that hunt was one of the best podcast episodes, just like most entertaining and cool to like hear you and Sam and your son all like kind of recapping the entire thing together and like sharing that story. But I mean, I love that, because I'd never really thought of it that way. Obviously, I don't have kids or anything, and I have yet to take a brand new, I guess I can't say that, I've taken one out. I love what you said there about the through line of like, yeah, whether they're 45 or they're 9, they feel the same gravity of that taking of a life, and, you know, the same, I think it's really cool even that he wasn't sure that he wanted to go out the next day. Cause I think that shows a lot of just awareness, I think, in that, you know, you don't need to take however many turkeys off the landscape or, you know, punch every single tag if you don't want to, you know, if it's the kind of thing where it's a, you know, a matter of filling the freezer and your family does that for, you know, for the year, you know, they're living off of that meat. That kind of puts you in a different headspace, I think, but especially with turkeys where, I don't know anyone who survives year round on just turkeys, but
I'm trying. It's not sustainable for the population or for me.
Right.
It's not, doesn't work out. Doesn't pencil out that one.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. What did the, I'm curious, what did like the early years, you mentioned like looking at your mentor who had the three kids, you know, you have three kids. What did like the early stages of like, you know, finding the balance, like you mentioned, what did that look like for you, in being a guy who's filling the freezer for the year through hunting, and also working in the hunting industry? What did those conversations look like with family members and finding the balance and all that kind of stuff look like?
Yeah. Process. That's a process. Mm-hmm. I think for anybody, for me, it was, I'll say that guy, Bill Neff, that I mentioned that had three kids, that I was amazed. He had three girls, has three girls. And I was just always amazed by, he was just such a great great guy, and he was so warm and always showed up with such good energy. And he was, you know, my boss, but I still admire him to this day. And there was a moment, and my son James was born in 2016, and there was a moment in 2017 where I was gone a lot, and I had just gone. I was an embarrassing amount of riches of opportunity that I had at that time professionally. I had gone to Nepal hunting that March, the March after my son was born. I had gone to Utah on an elk hunt. I had gone to Alberta on a whitetail hunt. I'd gone to Louisiana on a duck hunt. I'd gone to Hawaii on an axis deer hunt. I'd been to New Zealand. And this is all in like a 7 or 8 month span. It was pretty cool. I mean, let's not let, you know, as a young guy getting those opportunities, I was soaking it in. Some might say maybe too much. But Bill sat me down. I remember we were going to film a Yeti, films thing in, hunting caribou and sheep in the Northwest Territories. I had been on this run of traveling a lot. I had a young, you know, 8-month-year-old baby and a wife at home in Texas, and I living in a town where we didn't have family, and they were kind of just stuck out in the middle of nowhere, and I was traveling the world. But this is what I had done for the 10 years prior to that. But Bill sat me down, and Bill's not one to criticize, but he said, "Hey, do you think you need to go on this trip?" And I said, "Well, it's a Yeti film. It's a film I helped put together. I want to go. I mean, I need to go." And he said, "Well, I'm your boss, and I'm telling you that you've been gone a lot and you don't need to go." I was like, "Well, what do you mean? It's the Northwest Territories. It's this, it's that." And that was a moment for me. I went, I didn't listen to Bill. I went on that trip. And, I also, we did a film that has since come out about, the Eastman family and how Gordon Eastman, had pioneered the Northwest Territories, and his grandkids were coming back, and it was a great film. You should go to Yeti's YouTube channel and find it. It's a really cool film, and I'm glad I was there for it. But two things happened on that hunt. We were there to make a film for Yeti, and I went off and shot a caribou on my own. I didn't need to do that. That was a part of the gig. I did it because I wanted to hunt a caribou. So that was pretty selfish. But then I didn't need to go on that trip. I was told by my boss I could stay home with my family, and I needed to go do those things. That, like, when I got back, I'm so glad. That was a great trip. It was a great year, obviously, of all the things I said. But like that, when I got back from that trip, I realized, oh, I can't be gone. I can't leave my family for this, and I also can't be in this to go hunting. Like that's not. I love hunting, and that's a problem like, in this way. So these are first world issues, mm-hmm. I imagine. But that was where I was at the time. I had to peel that back, and I had to say, look, my family is my priority. So traveling the world, as fun as this is going to be, I cannot, because I would come home and, you know, my wife would be like, "Thanks for the pile of dirty clothes. Your son and I have our own rhythm. Don't mess our rhythm up. Just come in."
You're just showing up now. And
yeah, just like come in, like just be there, be with us, spend the time, but don't, you know. And so some of those conversations were hard for me to peel back, like the life that I was living that I thought was a dream and having children and starting to like mesh that together. And it didn't happen overnight. It took me a while to figure out how to blend that together and do it right. And part of it was really having to, you know, kill the boy, like having to get rid of who I was and know that, like, you know, people say, like, be where you are. Like, I had to be a dad, and that was what I needed to be, and I couldn't be gone all the time. And so, yeah, over some time, I made that transition. And part of the reason I wanted to move to Montana is I was like, dude, all the things I love to do are in Montana. I can move there, establish a life there. And I tell my kids now, we moved here because of the outdoors and my passion for hunting. We didn't come here for any other reason. Like, part of your legacy living in Montana and being a transplant is because I live this. It's who I am. It's what I love to do. and I moved us here because I wanted to share that with you and I wanted to do it myself. That's part of the family legacy. We're not from here, but I was drawn here by that, those experiences. And so it's kind of turned into a fun story for our family. But there was a moment where I needed to realize that, hey, dumbass, you know, you got some people that are relying on you, but they're relying on you to be there. Not, you know, that's number one. Being there is what they need from you.
For sure, man. Well said. And that's a tough lesson to learn, especially when you're in the industry and like kind of in that stage of your career where it's like, go, 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 like fill the calendar, fill the schedule, like maximize the opportunity. Cause I mean, I find myself in that kind of headspace right now where it's like, I've got a little bit of like FOMO of like, well, what if I don't do this trip? Or what if I don't like fill that tag, or I don't do this? Like, am I going to like discredit myself if I eat tag soup for this one or something like that, or whatever happens? And I mean, dude, I shot a buck a handful of years ago in like early stages of my relationship with my girlfriend, and at a stage where I was doing a little too much and we were learning to communicate a little bit better. And I should say I was learning to communicate better.
Yeah, keep learning.
Yep. And I
learn every day.
Yep. And I you know, shot this buck, and I look at that buck, and like the memory I have of that deer is like, man, you were an idiot back then. Like, cool, you got that deer, but like you kind of look at it and like you remember that stage of life or that sort of thing. And it's like you said earlier, it's a balancing act, man. But also super cool that that's kind of like your family's own sort of settlement in Montana, and what drove you there was to effectively start a new life for yourself, which is really freaking cool, and open up those opportunities. And I think it was Donnie Vincent, I heard say this. And he was like, he said something about like trying to find a split or a spot to live where you're within, like if you could only hunt there within like a 25-mile radius or something like that, you know, like would you be able to do it, and like positioning yourself to be able to do that kind of stuff and have those opportunities and fill your cup in that regard is that's pretty freaking cool
opportunity. Yeah, man, it's cultural too. You know, we live here in Bozeman, say what you will about it, but I mean, it's a place where people go outside. You know, it's a place where people ice climb and ski and cross country ski and care about that stuff, gather around that stuff, hunt, fish. I mean, I always make a joke that like every time I'm in a restaurant, there's like 20 of me in there, bearded dudes wearing flannel and hoodies and whatnot. You know, like that, okay, like that. But that's a fun joke to say. It's real, but it's a community and a culture where we celebrate the outdoors, and we, you know, we go and do things. And so that's a big part of it too, for my family to live in a place where these days I spend a lot of time in my kids' jujitsu practices and their football practices and all these other things. And all the people are there to talk about hunting. It's great.
That's super cool, man. Yeah. Imagine if Meat Eater had decided to headquarter in Seattle, you'd be in ripped skinny jeans and a beanie or something. It'd be
Yeah, man, probably.
That would be insane to actually like picture where Meat Eater would be if they had settled in Seattle.
I know. Well, Ranella lived in Seattle at the time. Right. I'm gonna grab a drink real quick.
Yeah, go for it.
But yeah, Ranella lived in Seattle at the time. And yeah, I mean, he old sponsored Hunting Collective Element. Buddy Rob.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
He's a good dude.
What was the cocktail you guys made? The salty
Gilbert.
Salty Gilbert, that's right.
That dude that yelled at me that time. That's a scary, scary moment. real scary moment. But yeah, anyway, those little things. Like I knew at the time, you know, that transitional time in my life where I knew I wanted to build a family. I knew that, you know, my wife and my son and I wanted to build a bigger family, and I wanted to build a thing. I wanted that to be my identity. And I wanted to, you know, really be able to say, look, when you have children, it needs to change you. There's a very famous quote. I was like, let it change you. Let it change everything. It needs to. It should. Like, don't hang on to who you were, because now you have this different thing that you have to focus on. And it's all encompassing, and it needs to be. And so for me, that transition of kind of going through that in my early 30s was a big deal. And I knew I wanted to find a way to prioritize my family and move to a place that I could still do what I wanted to do and still build that into who we are. And so we're working at it. We're doing pretty good right now with kind of that. But I mean, I've been walking around Elk Hunt with my son, and we talk about it. We talk about why we're here, what it means to be here, and how special it is to be on public land, and how special it is to be transplants in Montana, and that we owe a debt to really the outdoors. And you know, that's how we position our philosophies.
Yeah, definitely, dude. Well, man, you're one of the few Western guys who, you know, obviously you travel quite a bit, but I feel like, at least in my neck of the woods here, it's mostly Midwestern driftless folks who go out west. They do the destination hunt. They want to go chase mule deer or elk or pronghorn, whatever it may be. I feel like we don't get a whole lot of Westerners who come to the Midwest to chase our deer and turkeys and stuff. What is it about, like, you know, obviously you have the connection with the Durin farm, but what is it about, like, the driftless region that keeps you coming back?
Well, I had to explain it to my son, James, when we came there to the Doe Derby. I was like, you're going to see, it looks different in the winter. It's much, much more magical in the springtime, in my view. Mm-hmm. But there's this very distinct look and feel of the driftless region. And a lot of Wisconsin. Wisconsin has its own very unique, very innate things that you just don't get anywhere else. I mean, the people, the landscape, all of it. There's a picture of my 9-year-old sitting next to Doug Durin at the campfire. I don't know this gentleman. I got to just shake his hand briefly at the Doe Derby. But there's an older gentleman sitting next to him in, like, overalls and a skunk hat. I don't know who that guy is.
Yep.
He's in that photo. He looks awesome. And I'm looking at that photo. I'm like, dude, that's why I love Wisconsin. There is a Wisconsin deer camp to me is a northern deer camp is part of hunting lore. Like, it's etched in from the time of, like, World War II, when people were coming back from the war and getting on a train and going and chasing big bucks in Wisconsin. Like, if you close your eyes and picture the black and white deer hunting camp, those old photos, a lot of them are probably in that area, like, probably in Wisconsin. Like, there is this, you know, great hunting lore. And so to me personally, I think that area of the world holds a, you know, a historical marker in hunting, not alone like Otto Leopold and all these others, the other pioneers that are from that area or wrote about that area. That adds to it. But I do think that, like, Wisconsin deer camp especially is something that, like, marks a certain point in time in a certain way. And so I had to explain it to my 9-year-old, like, hey, this is his first house. He's like, this is my first house party. I was like, yeah, kind of. I mean, yeah, you're having hot chocolate, but yeah. So he got to experience his first house party in at Doug Durin's Doe Derby. But I think that's unique. I know it's unique.
Mm-hmm.
And having traveled around and having seen those things, I try to identify those little pieces of that puzzle for my boy. And for me, because it is a fun, like, there's really important regional differences and kind of just cultural things that you could pull from that. But yeah, a deer camp was something that I had kind of thought of and wrote down for my son. And his first deer camp was in Wisconsin. It was awesome.
Hell yeah. That's so cool, man. And, like, yeah, there's, I spent a lot of time driving around, obviously, for chasing trout and deer and turkey and all sorts of stuff. It's been more than enough time in that region. But it's like there's a vastness, but also it's extremely, like, cozy and intimate. Like, yeah, like the ridges and everything, like, shoot up over your head, and you drive into one valley and down over the next and everything, and it feels like you just got sucked into a vacuum almost. And it's like a weird quiet almost if the wind's not blowing in there. But at the same time, it's like the walls just kind of hug you. And the cool thing about like the deer camp too, especially like the doe derby, is like, yeah, it was an antlerless season and it was a 4-day whatever and it was colder than hell and all that. But like it could have been opening day of the nine-day rifle season. And the people, the vibe, the behavior, like would have been exactly the same. The only thing that would have changed is you probably would have seen more cars driving up and down the road. That's the only thing. But it's it is definitely unique.
I've always kind of just loved the experience of traveling and seeing those things. I mean, we turkey hunted at Doug's place and then deer hunted and then like seeing the different moments there and just kind of how it's treated and what it is. Me and Doug always laugh and argue about sitting for turkeys and sitting for deer and walking around, you know, mooching, all the things that you do. But I come away from it saying like, hey, going down to Louisiana for a gator trip and eating fried food and sitting at the bar and having a cheeseburger and going, getting on the gator boat, like that's a moment. That's a thing. It's a piece of culture. Not every state has those things. Like not every place, there's a reason why like all the reality shows are based in Louisiana or Alaska or, you know, places like Wisconsin. There's a reason why there's TV shows based there and the accents are a little bit funny. And the way that people react, it's like, it very much is stitched into the fabric of the outdoors, Wisconsin, driftless, deer camp, whatever. It is very much, it's different that way, at least to me. And so, I'm there mostly just because I love Doug. And I love Aldo Leopold, and I feel romantic about the place. But man, that being able to, we stayed in Doug has a little cabin on the far end of his property. You know, it was -20, and it's a rough cabin, so there's no no heat or electricity. Mm-hmm. But it was cool, man. Is that the entire Aldo Leopold quote about like a young 9-year-old just learned that, you know, meat doesn't come from the grocery store and heat does not come by flicking a switch. And my son got to chop wood to put in the fire to stay warm. And he got to hike over to the blind and sit all day and make jokes. He did all that in spades. And I think he got the full experience at Doug's place. That's for sure.
Yeah. Definitely, especially when it was like 4 degrees or whatever. That is,
yeah, there was like a couple of -20-degree mornings there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I told Doug last night, I mean, I said, man, again, like I keep running into these moments as a father in the outdoors and somebody who's spent a lot of time thinking about the outdoors and just obsessing over it and philosophizing about it, doing all those things, talking about a podcast, find myself in awe of it again, and incredibly thankful to be where I'm at. And so I was like, dude, that is the best thing. And you know, that trip to Wisconsin provided a lot of that for me and my son. My son wore his Sharing the Land hat that Doug signed every day for like a month after that. He slept in it a couple of days. And so he feels like he's a part of your thing now.
Totally.
You know, and I'm so grateful for that. I hope he remembers that the rest of his life, and I would bet that he will.
Yeah.
Given how cool it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, literally cool. But
yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. Dude, that's super cool, man. Man, I know you got a call to hop on here in just a sec, but before we wrap up here, will you be back to the Driftless chasing turkeys this spring?
I'm coming. Yep.
Hell yeah.
I'm coming. Awesome. We're gonna film. We were locking it in last night with old Dougie. Old bubbly Doug.
What season you
got? Yeah, we're going to, what are we, season C?
Oh, nice. Sweet.
Season C, is that right?
Yeah.
That's like, yeah. So we're excited for that. We're going to film that for Roost, me and James. There's a particular turkey over there. We hunted there last year with Jesse Griffiths. There's a particular turkey that lives on that farm. His name is Limpy, for obvious reasons. And sure enough, he was the first turkey we saw when we went there last year. We did not tag out last year. Jesse and I had a great adventure, but we did not get a turkey. And then this year, I show up for deer camp, and Limpy is just limping around the cabin. And I would swear, I don't know this to be true, but I would swear that Limpy's about 5 feet tall if he's a foot. Mm-hmm. He's probably about 40 pounds. And he lives there by himself on the Durin farm, just limping around with one leg. And I'm going for him.
Hell yeah.
I don't like to name my turkeys and hunt. I'm not naming like a deer on the back 40, but this is an exception. Limpy is an exception to that rule. I'm coming back for Limpy. So
hell yeah.
Just hope he makes it through the winter, dude. I hope he lives through the winter. And if he does, he's not fast. He's not fleet of foot, but he's smart. We saw him one time, and we did not see him again after that. And three or four days of hunting. I'm pretty certain he has a series of underground tunnels he uses during the spring season. So we're coming back for Limpy in season C.
Yeah, he can't be fast, so he's got to be smart. That's what he's got to do. He's just a cagey old bastard.
He's learned. So I'll be back for Limpy, so check that out on Roost.
The quest for Limpy. I hope
I'm kind of rooting for Limpy in this whole thing. But I look forward to it, man. I'd only been to Doug's like one time prior to this recent few times going back there, and now that I've been there three times within a year span, I'm still excited, so very, very happy to be a part of Doug's community, man. It's a really, like I said, real special place and special group of people. And don't get that too often in life.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely a special place with some extremely special people for sure. Well, dude, I look forward to the quest for Limpy, and hopefully, I don't know. I don't know. I honestly, now that you're saying that and painting the picture, I don't know who I'm rooting for right now.
I root for Limpy. I go Limpy.
Hopefully he makes it to like so seven. Yeah. It'll be like just an ancient bird with like a 17-inch beard and 3-inch spurs. Oh, yeah. And just
Colonel Tom
around.
Kelly said that's a nemesis bird. Those birds are to be respected, and those birds are also to be traded. Now, when he beats you up to the point where you just can't do it anymore, you're allowed to pass him off to another hunter. Mm-hmm. As you're now allowed to hunt him and get your butt kicked just as well. And so I imagine he'll kick my butt this year, and I'll pass him off to somebody hopefully when I leave. So like I said, I'm a little bit rooting for him. It'll be hard to pull the trigger if he comes limping in. But
yeah, right.
We'll find out.
Yeah, definitely. Well, man, I've got a season C tag too. That happens to be my favorite time period in Wisconsin's turkey season. So I think the odds are at least stacked in your favor. And I can't wait to see what happens, dude. But man, before we wrap up here, where can folks go if they want to check out your media company, check out what you're doing, follow along with the Roost, all that good stuff?
Yeah, Roost is roostshow.com. You can go to our YouTube channel, Instagram, TikTok, all the fun things. That's a seasonal show, so we're going to launch that on February 17th this year. We got a bunch of really cool stuff in store, some partnerships we're really excited to unveil across the conservation space there. We're making our own. I got a box of 300 calls that we've got put together this year. We're really proud of those. We're going to be putting those on the market pretty soon for everybody. Super excited about that part of the deal, and then we're gonna have a fun 3-4 month run across the country chasing turkeys, and man, it's a fun one. So we do it just each season, and we end it and bring it back every February. So this is kind of a cool time of year. As soon as the Super Bowl ends, boy, we're full turkeys.
Hell yeah, dude. I cannot wait for that. I'm after this week's little Arctic blast, I'm thinking warm thoughts. I can't wait for spring. But
me too, man.
Yeah. But dude, this has been awesome, man. I seriously appreciate the heck out of your time, and can't thank you enough for coming on the show. And I look forward to the quest for Limpy, man.
We'll see you in the spring there in season C. Y'all keep Limpy alive till then, please.
Yeah, we'll do what we can, man. Sweet, buddy. Well, hey, good luck, and we'll talk to you soon, man. Take it easy.
Awesome. Thanks, Pierce.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at The Wisconsin Sportsman. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore on this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, Lone Wolf Custom Gear, Onyx Hunt, Huntworth Gear, Good Chance Fly Fishing, and the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Please go support the brands that support this show. And if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other awesome outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.